Okay, thank you again for joining us today. We're here in St. Paul, Minnesota, talking about some recent decisions of the Seventh Circuit case. And welcome also to anyone listening in our podcast today. During the program, for those of you listening to the podcast, I will be giving three code words as part of the program. I have to verify attendance in Wisconsin, and to do that, I will give three code words during today's program. Simply send me those code words at the end of the program to get your certificate of attendance. But we're going to be talking about some recent decisions of the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals. Today's program is being presented for credit both in Minnesota and Wisconsin. Wisconsin, obviously, these cases are the binding federal precedents in your jurisdiction. Here in Minnesota, of course, we're in the Eighth Circuit, so these are not binding precedents, but they're certainly persuasive precedents, and a number of these cases are very interesting. All these have been decided in the past couple of weeks or so, early September of 2010. And well, because it becomes first, we will start with the First Amendment, and our first case is Kingstead versus the State Bar of Wisconsin. I don't know if any of you Wisconsin attorneys are familiar with Mr. Kingstead, but it sounds like he's been involved in some of this litigation quite a bit. By way of background, for those of you here in Minnesota, Wisconsin has a mandatory bar association, or what's sometimes called an integrated bar. Attorneys who practice law in Wisconsin are required to be a member of the state bar. Now, here in Minnesota, I'm not a joiner, so I'm not a member of the Minnesota Bar Association. And in Minnesota, that's basically the same as any other private organization. It's not required to practice law. But in Wisconsin, it is. Well, anytime you have an association with membership, of course, you have dues, and attorneys have to send in their dues. And also, anytime you have a mandatory association, well, one of the things that any kind of organization or association does is speak. You know, they send out their monthly magazine, and they speak, they act through their speaking on various topics. Well, that always raises the subject of compulsory speech. If somebody is forced to be a member of this organization, then he's forced to participate in the speech of that organization. And that, of course, raises some First Amendment concerns. So how the, like I say, this has been litigated a great deal over the years, many of the cases with the same party. And how it's kind of shaken out is that when you as a Wisconsin attorney get your statement for bar dues at the end of the year, it's broken down into two categories. One is your mandatory dues that you have to pay to practice law in the state. But because some of this speech is speech that you might not want to participate in, and you shouldn't have to participate in, part of the dues are optional. You're not required to pay the dues for that amount. And each year when they do their budget, the state bar breaks down their budget and allocates particular cost items to mandatory items and to voluntary items. And they publish that, and they say you owe X dollars in mandatory dues, and if you want, you can pay the Y dollars in voluntary dues. It's pretty well settled that any kind of political speech or advocacy for some particular ideological position, that has to come under the voluntary portion of the dues. Well, in this case, for some reason, the lawyers in the state of Wisconsin, I know it sounds crazy, but they kind of got the idea that they did not have a great public image amongst the members of the public. So some of the members of the Bar Association were clamoring for a program to increase to better their public image with the public. So the Bar Association took this to heart, and they came up with this public relations campaign. And in this public relations campaign, they had TV spots and all kinds of stuff showing members of the bar as good members of the community and helping out the city. So it showed them improving the lives of senior citizens, participating in mock trials in the schools, having legal clinics, and even bringing food to food pantries and volunteering. And they even had a slogan for their campaign that was Wisconsin lawyers, expert advisors serving you. Now, it doesn't say how this program came out. Here in the Twin Cities, you get a lot of radio public service announcements from Wisconsin, but we don't get too many television PSAs, so I've never heard these particular commercials. So maybe some of you members of the Wisconsin Bar can tell us whether your estimation in the eyes of the community went up a little bit after this campaign. But in any event, they did this program. And they allocated the cost of this program to the mandatory portion of the bar dues. And the Bar Association took the position, well, this wasn't political. You know, we weren't saying vote for the Democrat or vote for the Republican or vote for this person, or we weren't saying amend this law. And it wasn't ideological. It was here to help out all the members of the bar. Therefore, we can put it under the compulsory portion. How the system is kind of shaken out over the years is that after the Bar Association makes this determination, if a particular member objects, he can bring that to an arbitrator. The arbitrator's decision can be appealed to the state court. And what happened here is this lawyer, Mr. Kingstad, decided that, no, I don't want to waste my money telling the people what a good person I am. You know, in fact, I mean, you know, sometimes that poor reputation we have sometimes serves us well, you know. So that wasn't necessarily helping him out at all. I don't know if that was his thought process, but he decided to appeal this. He appealed it to an arbitrator, and his argument was, well, yeah, probably not political or ideological, but what it is, it's not germane to improving the quality of public, the quality of service we deliver to the public. Yeah, it makes us look good, but it doesn't help the public at all. So that was his argument. Well, the arbitrator rejected that, and he said, well, no, it wasn't political or ideological, so the question of whether or not it is germane really doesn't enter into it. The plaintiff appealed that, sought judicial review in the state courts. Interestingly, the State Bar Association is the one that removed it to federal court because it was a federal question arising under the First Amendment. So it went to the U.S. District Court, and the District Court affirmed the arbitrator's ruling, saying, oh, no, it wasn't political or ideological, so it's okay. Well, Mr. Kingstad and these objecting lawyers appealed that to the Court of Appeals, and the Court of Appeals did affirm, but they said, no, it has to be more than just merely non-political, non-ideological. It has to be germane. It has to be something that's reasonably related to the constitutionally relevant purpose of the association. And here, the constitutionally relevant purpose of the association was to improve the quality of service to members of the public by improving the administration of justice in Wisconsin. So it has to relate to that purpose. So then, of course, the court has to look at it and say, well, you know, is this germane? Is Wisconsin lawyers, expert advisors serving you, showing, you know, this lawyer bringing a bag of groceries to the food bank, is that germane to improving the administration of justice in Wisconsin? And here the state bar made the argument, well, yeah, it is, because for the legal system to work, you have to go in, you have to talk to your lawyer, you have to hire your lawyer in the first place, and you have to be open with him and provide a lot of good information. And if you know that your lawyer is the kind of guy who donates his time at the food bank, then you're more likely to trust him. And therefore, you'll give him better information. Therefore, he'll be able to do a better job. Therefore, the administration of justice in Wisconsin will work a lot better. So that's how they found it germane. Now, there was a dissent from that. Actually, a dissent from the denial of rehearing in bank. So a judge who didn't even participate in the panel dissented, and he said, That's nonsense. That doesn't help the administration of justice one bit. It's just helping this, you know, maybe it helps the, you know, the reputation of these lawyers. And the district court kind of said, well, yeah, you know what, you're right. They probably did just make this stuff up. But they did grant a great deal of deference to the Bar Association in making that determination that it was germane. And so it's kind of like, it's almost like one notch down from a rational basis test. I think that's what they called it, a rational basis, but it's a pretty low standard to show that they met that germaneness. Now, if it were actually political or ideological, then I suspect they would probably employ a little bit higher standard. But under the facts of this case, they ruled that, yeah, this public relations campaign was kind of germane to improving the administration of justice. Therefore, we will allow it. Well, our next First Amendment case moves down to the Taste of Chicago Festival, Goldhammer v. Nagode, right there on the shores of Lake Michigan. And that brings us to our first code word for our podcast listeners. The first code word, first of the three code words, is Michigan. The first code word is Michigan. But anyway, down there on the shores of Lake Michigan, there was the Taste of Chicago going on. And the Taste of Chicago, of course, is there are all kinds of restaurants and everybody come out to this big public celebration, and you can eat a sampling of all the foods that Chicago has to offer. In addition to food, they have all kinds of other exhibits. You have a large crowd of people out there. One of the exhibitors that came out there to show what they had was military recruiters. They had a military recruiting booth. Well, whenever you have military recruiters, of course, you don't have to look far to find protesters. And sure enough, there were protesters here. Well, here the Chicago police apparently wanted the Taste of Chicago to run smoothly, and they didn't want it to be too marred by these protesters. So the Chicago police formed a line between the protesters and the recruiters' booth, and ordered the protesters to disperse. And their grounds for getting the protesters to disperse was a Chicago ordinance that said, if a cop tells you to disperse, you have to disperse under the circumstances where three or more persons are committing acts of disorderly conduct in the immediate vicinity. Well, I mean, I guess an ordinance